This is Dan Hansis along with Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal of the Around the NFL podcast.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, buddy. On the latest show, we talk about Martellus Bennett's arrival in New England and how that could affect the Patriot offense. And then we do some over-unders on some big names of the free agency period, and Greg Rosenthal drops a bombshell about his personal life.
I do not do that, but just start sizing those rings. Marty B coming to town. It's over.
NFL.com/podcast, and also check us out and leave comments on iTunes.
Damashek Football Program, available on iTunes and at davedamashek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Damashek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Damashek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to the Dave Damashek Football Program, available on iTunes, nfl.com/podcasts, Stitcher, and beyond. Let's get to it for the second show in a row. We're not going to introduce anybody. Well, okay, Chris Wessling and Bucky Brooks. We'll get into further explanations, and we'll tell you that Shaq Lawson's coming up. But real quick, it's time for our opening show, Lightning Round. Let's get to it. Like Devin Hester fielding an opening kickoff and taking it to the house, we're starting at full speed. Are the Patriots the AFC favorite after these recent signings? Chris Wessling, how say you?
Of course they are. They should be the AFC favorite every year.
Yeah, but Brady's old. Buck, how say you?
No.
Who is?
Pittsburgh Steelers.
The Pittsburgh Steelers, even without Martavis Bryant, allowing us to jump to our next subject here. Is the NFL behind the times when it would look like society is about to legalize weed across these United States to still be shutting guys down for full seasons for it? And I said this not as a Steeler homer. I said this when something similar happened to Josh Gordon. How say you, Buck?
I still go back and forth with this issue because it is – we are seeing a wave of legalization of marijuana throughout the country. However, every workplace has rules, and you have to abide by those rules. And so
I hear you. You're like Elliot Ness in The Untouchables. If it's in
the rules, it hasn't been collectively bargained out of it. I have to say that Martavis Bryant and the other guys who violated it are still wrong.
I hear you, but a year is an awfully long stretch to have
because
to
he's
do.
A repeat offender.
Yes, now, that's right.
The only thing I'll say about that is I don't like the fact that they can't have contact with the team. I think they still should be in a structured environment, even though they can't play.
Good point. Wes, how say you?
We're going to look back in 20 years. Our kids are going to look back in 20 years and wonder at the fact that people were missing years for smoking pot.
Let alone the medicinal value that seems to be emerging here in the 21st century. The best quarterback as of Super Bowl 50, Chris Wessling, how say you?
Tom Brady.
Of course. Bucky, how say you?
Joe Montana.
Joe Montana still holds on. We're going to get into that in just a second, a little bit deeper. It's a piece I have up there on NFL.com right now. Lastly, though, Bucky, the March Madness tourney is underway, if you haven't heard. Who's going to win it all?
The Tar Heels.
Oh, come
North
on.
Carolina.
Oh, come on, Buck. Wes, how
best team
you?
In the land.
I have – who's in it? I have no idea.
Oh, can I tell you something?
What?
This is the first time in, I don't know, 25 years? No, more than that, 30 years, 40 years probably, that I have not filled out a bracket. I know nothing about college basketball.
I can't fill out brackets.
I feel sad. I really, it's a passing of – it's a rite of passage that I have passed on in 2016. I can't speak intelligibly or even write down. If I didn't see the number next to the team, I would have no idea who's good or bad or who's supposed to win any
game. So how can you challenge me about Carolina not winning the title?
I'm fine with it. I give you the business, but your Clemson adversary, Shaq Lawson, as I mentioned a second ago, is going to join us here in Studio 66 in a little while, and he is projected to go very high. Bucky Brooks has his new mock draft out there at NFL.com. You have Shaq Lawson going to the Chicago Bears at number 11. So, Buck, you're not convinced that what Belichick and company have done here is going to be enough to give Brady one last crack. Well, I don't know, one last crack, but this is, you know, he is getting up there, and we continue to ignore it, or he forces us to ignore it by his sublime play. But in 2016, are you anticipating finally age setting in on TB there?
I mean, Tom Brady is going to be Tom Brady. When you look at the Patriots and how they play, it's still a dink and dunk offense. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of passes that are under 10 yards. He allows his playmakers to catch the ball and run, and they make plays, and most people can't tackle on the perimeter. So it's always problematic. I like the move with Martellus Bennett coming over. I think it's the best tight end tandem they've had since Aaron Hernandez got in his trouble. So now they have two tight ends that can spread the field. Deion Lewis will return. So offensively, they will always be what they've been. But on defense, you can't keep losing blue-chip players and play at a high level. And I know people say, oh, they can replace Chandler Jones' production with Chris Long and Shea McClellan, who that's debatable because I think he didn't necessarily pan out in Chicago. I just don't know. This guy was a guy that had 12 and a half sacks last year. He was a big-time player for them.
Yep.
And unless you get a replacement, I don't know how that defense can continue to win. When they won the Super Bowl, they had a championship defense.
Is Shea McClellan a poor man's answer there?
No, not an answer. And I like Chris Long, but he's not an answer either. He's an aging player, a declining player, not what Chandler Jones is. I understand economically what the Patriots are doing. I just don't like removing talented players from my defense.
Wes, you know, it occurs to me when I look at these Patriots that so you're looking at them as your AFC favorite. You know, the model has been made clear way back to the first time the Giants beat them in the Super Bowl, how to get to Brady. Brady doesn't like getting hit, but that's more difficult to execute than it is it's easier to say that than it is to execute that. Do you think at this age, given the state of that offensive line, and you know they can obviously do some things before you know they go get Jonathan Cooper. I'm no offensive line wizard. I can't address, but Jonathan Cooper sounds like a bust. It seems like everybody has announced, hey, wow, they fixed their offensive line. Why? By getting a bust?
No, they fixed their offensive line because the offensive line wasn't a problem until injury set in.
Yeah.
They didn't need new faces. They need health. They were fine all year. If people forget that through early November, they were unbeatable. They were going through the whole NFL. Nobody could hang with them. The Edelman gets injured. Gronk gets injured. Deion Lewis gets injured. LeGarrette Blount gets injured. Nate Solder gets injured. Sebastian Vollmer gets injured. Their guards get injured. Everybody got injured. I think they had three subs playing on their offensive line against the Broncos. I don't think they needed to – they need tackle depth because you can't, when Sebastian Vollmer has to flip over to the left side, that's a problem because Marcus Cannon played right tackle and got destroyed. They need health, and they probably need some tackle depth, but I don't think they needed this whole offensive line overhaul that everyone was talking about. To me, they were the best team in the NFL for most of the season until injury struck.
Big move. Offensive line coach Dante Scarnecchia comes back out of retirement. He was the line coach for them when they were in their heyday. Jonathan Cooper could be a nice value find. Jonathan Cooper, the big thing, he was drafted as a top 10 pick as a guard. He broke his leg. And he hasn't necessarily played up to potential since being hurt. Maybe they're able to get him back to health. Maybe he gets his confidence back and he plays to the level that everyone projected him to play at when he entered the league. If that happens, then it's a great move. My issues with the Patriots never stems from their offense. Their offense is always going to score around 30 points a game. They're always going to give them a chance. The big thing is defensively, when you need them to get stops, when it matters, are they going to be good enough on defense? We saw them remove Darrell Revis, and Malcolm Butler played pretty well. He ends up playing at a Pro Bowl level. He's fine, but I still worry about the rest of the team. You lose Jared Mayo, some of those other guys. Who are going to be the blue-chip guys that kind of carry them through, and how long can they depend on the likes of Rob Ninkovich and some of those older players to kind of hold the fort?
Let me ask you this, Bucky. I know Dominic Easley got injured late in the year, and Malcolm Brown really came on. If those two guys, they could emerge as playmakers there at defensive tackle.
They could, because Malcolm Brown was playing on the other side of the line. He was a disruptive player on the inside. The big thing for the Patriots is Jabal Sheard could give them pass rush presence. Chandler Jones was so athletic and good. And I understand, like, on paper, it makes sense because after you see Olivier Vernon get the kind of contract that he got, it's coming. It was coming down the pipeline, and we know that the Patriots aren't going to pay that kind of money. And so it makes sense. But in this draft, I don't know if there's a suitable replacement to give them what Chandler Jones
did. Well, speaking of suitable replacements, you can pretty much pencil in the Patriots as the AFC favorite for the last, half dozen years at least. Or you at least wouldn't look crazy for doing that. It really did look like as of a week ago that the Steelers were the favorite. It looked like things were coming together, the defense. But this Martavis Bryant, how bad is it, do you think, Wes?
Here's what I know from crunching the numbers. They score 30 points per game or more in 50% of games with Martavis Bryant and 25% of games without him. To me, that's pretty significant. They average 29 points per game with him and 22 without him. He's dynamic, and he might be a bit of – he might have some issues off the field, but he is a dynamic, dynamic talent. You could argue he's more talented than Antonio Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's no argument in terms of a pure talent perspective where you're talking about athleticism and those things. He's more athletic. He's more explosive as an athlete than Antonio Brown. Not quite as refined. It is a huge loss. The good thing for the Steelers, you go into the season knowing that you have to fill that void. You have to find someone that can take the top off the defense, that can play that role. Now, do you have that
Shouldn't that guy have been? Or, you know, I didn't make a case quickly enough, but shouldn't Mike Wallace have been a consideration for that?
No.
I don't think so.
That ship is sailed. Talking about bringing him back?
Yeah.
No.
What have you seen out of Mike Wallace that makes you think that he would be better than Sammy Coates or even Darius Hayward Bay?
I would disregard his stops in Miami and Minnesota and just remember what he did in Pittsburgh and say, hey,
listen. A long time ago. That's like dog years. How many years? 3-4 years? I mean, that's a long time ago since he was.
But if you're asking him to be a one-dimensional guy, take the top off the defense, he can do that.
You can get a younger, cheaper
replacement. You're
right,
though. DHB can do that. Sammy Coates.
You can get a younger, cheaper replacement. You know, if Sammy Coates can catch the rock, I mean, he can jump in there. He's not as talented as Martavis Bryant, but he's certainly big and fast.
About this, then, as we are now fully into draft season, how did Martavis Bryant fall to the fourth round? Was it because were there whispers that maybe this was the issue? Because I recall when he was drafted that it was that he had a case of the dropsies sometimes.
A little bit of both. He had a case of the dropsies, and then some of the character stuff that has been revealed recently. Those are issues. A lot of times when people drop, there's something behind it. And sometimes you can get ahead of it. Sometimes you can get late, and he doesn't have any more issues. Tyrann Mathieu was a guy that if we had to reshuffle the deck and go to that draft, he would have been a first-round talent. He was a first-round player on tape. He had issues that led him to be a guy that was taken in the third round. Sometimes you hit on those guys. There are a couple of guys in this draft that we'll talk about that have issues, and you have to weigh the reward versus the risk. Is it worth taking a guy like a Robert Kimdichie, who is as talented as a Darnell Dockett? Do you take him early, knowing that he has some stuff off the field that could hinder you? I just think you have to be careful when you're evaluating those guys and know that sometimes it's a ticking time bomb and eventually it's going to blow.
How much did Dak Prescott hurt himself with his trouble last week?
Man, I tell young prospects all the time leading up to the draft, from the time you get to January through the draft, keep your nose clean. Stay out of trouble. Don't put yourself in a position where your character can jump in the question. Dak Prescott now has probably cost himself some money and draft position.
But has he, though? Because Shane Ray now fell to the Broncos, and now they benefit from everybody wringing their hands in the short term right around the draft and everything. And so he knocked himself down. But, that loss to the rest of the league is the Broncos' gain, right, Wes?
It is.
It's a post-Johnny Manziel world now.
Yeah.
That Johnny thing scares people now. Because everyone was duped. I sit here and say that I was duped by it because I thought I bought into the magic. I bought into being in the stadium when I watched him orchestrate his stuff against Duke. I bought into the stuff that he was saying and telling everybody when he came through the building, when he was interviewing with people and listening to my friends who talked about him interviewing well. And so when you see that and you take a chance on that and you see that kind of blow up in people's faces, you're reluctant to – kind of stick your hand out there. You have to have a strong system, a strong support system to take on a character guy. And you can take on one or two, but you can't take on a team full of those guys because when it goes bad, it blows up.
Doesn't this – because he plays quarterback, it's more of a big deal?
I get holding QBs to a higher standard.
Some people will say you hold them to a higher standard. I think the big thing for Dak, the proximity to the draft, knowing that so much stuff is on the line for you to – get behind the wheel of a car, inebriated, and do what you do. Not only just the dangers of doing that, but to do it knowing I'm a month away from the draft. Everyone is looking at me. There's some buzz behind my name. People are maybe envisioning me possibly being the face of the franchise. I'm going to get in here and risk all of that. And so it just – not so much him drinking or whatever. That's kind of secondary. It's more so the decision-making, the judgment.
Gotcha, yeah.
This is a guy that could be the face of my franchise. Can I trust him to be the face of my franchise when he makes those kind of decisions?
I predict, by the way, fellas, Martavis Bryant never wears the Steelers uniform again.
Wow.
They kind of have a little track record of that.
I don't don't know.
Santonio Holmes?
Yeah, Santonio Holmes. They you know,
did they trade him or his contract lapse?
They got rid of him. Yeah, it was the same summer as Roethlisberger was in his.
But I also think he has some infighting in the locker room. I don't think Martavis is a guy that is not well liked or he doesn't get along with his teammates. I think the Santonio Holmes thing was a little different.
Yeah, but don't forget Roethlisberger. What was that, December, when he challenged Martavis to?
Yeah, but that's, I don't think that's anything. I mean,
Ben's been begging for a 6'4" receiver for a decade now.
Since
can't give
Plax.
Him.
Well, he just got one from Southern California. His name's Ladarius Green. So all of a sudden he's got that guy, and maybe that guy is going to end up being the salvation that
he is fast.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. But, you know, as Dan Hanzu said on our last podcast here, you can go back and listen to that one. He says that let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. It's not like Ladarius Green has proven himself to be a stud yet in the NFL. The assumption that he's definitely going to be a big-time star in that offense.
He proved it to me last year. Watch the tape.
Yes, flashes.
I love it, but if they flash,
they can do it. Now it's a matter, can you get them to do it consistently? But also – it's understanding what is he? What is he? Because Jesse James, that's his name, right? Jesse James, tight end, Penn State.
Yep.
He can do all the dirty work. He can do all the stuff where he has to get his nose dirty, whatever. Right. Green can sit out there and post up and look like Jordan Reed. And everyone wants a Jordan Reed-type playmaker in that spread offense now. A guy that is listed as your tight end, but when he comes in, he's really an oversized wide receiver. That's what Green is. And so for the defense, you have to make a decision. Am I playing nickel? Or am I playing base against that? Because that guy creates problems. Green can create problems. So even without Martavis Bryant, with Antonio Brown and Marcus Wheaton and some of the other guys and Lev Bell coming back, who is going to match up with that guy? What are you going to play? Because if you play nickel, they're going to give you a steady dose of 26. So it puts the defense in a box.
I mean, you know, everybody knows it, but at some point it slides into rhetoric and you start to lose sight of the reality of things. But really – what if Bell is healthy and Antonio Brown is healthy and Seven is healthy? If they could just get that for one season, what might happen?
It'd be nice, but if I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers, I'm drafting another running back. I'm drafting a running back. I'm seeing if I can find a guy that is a Lev Bell clone, a big body back.
Well, because 26 is probably gone after this year.
Well, I don't know about him being necessarily
they
gone.
Want to keep him, certainly.
Yeah, but I'm not worried about him being gone, but I want to be able to run my offense when he's not there. What they were able to get from D'Angelo Williams, terrific, but you can't count on him doing that again at his age. Finding a young back, a guy that's dynamic. Think about Alabama has a guy named Kenyon Drake.
Yep.
Kenyon Drake can catch the ball out of the backfield, can run. It was probably underutilized at Alabama, has some durability issues. But if you can get a guy that can run and do some of the stuff that Lev Bell does in the passing game, now, if Bell is out, it doesn't matter. We still can run our offense.
Before we move on real quick, Buck, we were talking just before we got going here. The other team that you're intrigued by in the AFC, and a lot of other people are too, talk about the Houston Texans. Where are they right now? How good are they? Are they a division contender? Well, I guess they just won the division, so you're not going to knock them down from that. But are they a Super Bowl contender?
I'm writing about them right now. And in looking at all this stuff last night and the past few days, thinking about Osweiler, because I still feel like Osweiler, is crazy to me that Osweiler is getting paid $18.5 million to be.
Well, how did you regard him coming out?
He is what he is. Like, when I say this and people like, he's only started 22 games since he left high school.
That's fine. Oh, okay. Since high school.
22 games. He played one season at Arizona
State. Isn't that
good,
though? Isn't that sort of like, can I apply the Akeem Olajuwon effect here that, wow, that guy just started playing. He's just going to keep getting better and better later in life than most guys who've been playing it since they were.
Quarterback has proven that most guys that come into the league with 30 or more collegiate starts end up doing better.
Hasn't hurt Ryan Tannehill. I like to have fun.
I know. So the thing that you have to understand with Osweiler is there's going to be a significant learning curve. Does he fit well in Bill O'Brien's system? Absolutely. He's a guy that can stand in the pocket. He can deliver from the shotgun. He can throw the ball down the field. He is really good in the quick rhythm passing game. They're fine. The thing that they've done to help him, adding Lamar Miller. Lamar Miller was one of my favorites when he came out in the draft a couple years ago. I think this guy's terrific. He has not had enough touches. If he was my running back, he would get at least 20 to 25 touches a game because he's lightning in a bottle. In that offense, when you spread the field and you give him the ball on draws, delays, inside zones, powers, he can hit the home run. He also can catch in the screen game. What I like about Bill O'Brien and what he can do, and he hadn't done it with the Houston Texans yet, let's go empty and put the running back outside and use him as a receiver. He tried to do that a little bit with Aaron Foster. Aaron Foster popped his Achilles. Now you have a guy that is scary on the perimeter. He could be a guy that I think about being a guy that puts up a lot of numbers.
Funny, we Arian Foster's name has not been floated a great deal, although I guess it's not
older
that.
Running back.
Yeah.
He's waiting. Teams are waiting. He's one of those guys that you
can't even run right now.
Yeah, you just kind of check in with and right before camp or when the season is about to get underway.
When guys, you know, at a position that is at a premium these days, how come we haven't heard Brandon Carr? I know that's a random name to throw out, but how come is Brandon Carr just used up?
At corner?
Yeah.
Oh no! I mean,
he's just done. He was their best cover corner 2 years ago when they had a good season. It's just over for him.
I think the expectations when you get a number one corner, you pay him what they paid him. You expect a lot. You expect a lot of production. You expect this guy to be able to blanket top guys without assistance from safeties. And I can't confidently say that anyone.
He doesn't have to be a number one anymore. That's what I'm saying.
He doesn't. But we can find those guys because you wait until now. Like right now, where free agency is. You kind of reach a holding pattern. After that first week and all the dust is cleared, now we're okay. We'll talk to you, but let's see what happens in the draft. Let's see if we can get our guy in the draft. If we can't get our guy, you can be the first one we call. So that's where teams are kind of at right now.
I don't know why. He's just been floating around in my head. There are certain guys that because I circled certain guys that are going to be value guys who would probably slide to where we are right now, and now they're out there. Now I'm intrigued to see where they land because a guy like Brandon Carr could be a difference maker.
Isn't he still in the Cowboys roster?
No, didn't they? They cut him.
I thought they cut him.
Did they?
Yeah, he's a free agent now.
A difference maker?
I don't mean he is going to
be the
top.
You said it. That's your quote. That's a quote.
Right.
Dave Demeshek said Brandon Carr is a difference maker.
I mean that if you need to put the three corners out on the field these days, right?
Difference
for the record, still on the Cowboys roster.
All right, so cut that all cut all that out like it never happened. The point is, I find that all right. We took about a month and we got into some combined stuff, and properly pronounced combined.
But
the you know all of a sudden now. A week or so of free agency has done the trick for me. I'm ready for the season to start now. I'm excited.
You're always ready.
I can't wait. Are the Colts going to come back with Andrew Luck? Are they going to be relevant once again? Who's going to be the Jets QB, and can they repeat what they did last year and get to the next level? What about Rex and Rob Ryan in Buffalo? Fascinating stuff there. Or will the Patriots hold them off yet again? Oh, I lied. The Bengals. What about what the Ravens have been doing in free agency here? Is 2015 just going to be a year that they get a mulligan and 2016 they get back to form? It's a very fascinating AFC all of a sudden.
Fascinating AFC. What about
We could talk about the AFC. We could talk about the NFC too, but real quick, the reason I wanted Bucky and Wes here is because, Bucky, you played with a lot of the guys. At NFL.com, I this week have devoted my time to ranking by the decade in the Super Bowl era the 10 best quarterbacks. We started back in January of 1976. We ranked the top 10 quarterbacks as of that moment. Then we jumped ahead 10 years. That's the one that got a lot of heat, especially from one Chris Wessling, because I ranked – as of January 1986, Terry Bradshaw as the best quarterback of the Super Bowl era. That's right, Bucky. Give me a stink eye all you want.
The best quarterback.
As of Super Bowl 20. Yes.
The best quarterback.
He had four rings. The next best had two.
Oh, we ring collected.
Can we get some stats about what he did in those games?
Oh, in those games? That's not a winning angle to take there, Bucky.
Of the era? I mean, quarterback of that era.
Who elevated his game in the big game?
Terry Bradshaw, that's who. So you're going to tell me that the Pittsburgh Steelers are defined by Terry Bradshaw and not –
more than the narrative would have you believe at the very least. The idea that he was carried – listen, here's the thing that's really
I'm
bemused by the way certain guys get benefit of the doubt that other guys don't get. It's really very weird that somehow it's easy to fall back on, oh, that defense carried him and the running game carried him. It's nobody, just not so after.
Nobody said it
not,
carried it, him.
Right. But it's not it's not so that he was a passenger on the ride a la Peyton or Bob Greasy when those teams
think,
were winning
think,
in the early
I
70s.
Think, I think they're all in the same conversation.
But they're not, though. I mean, reality doesn't agree with them.
I think Peyton, Bob Greasy, all those other guys, I think they're in the same – I think Bob Greasy and Terry Brush are in the same conversation.
Oh, come on. I mean,
I do.
You're old enough that you watched those two guys play.
I did.
They're not comparable players in the league.
I think when you look at the teams, I think the teams are built similarly. You think about the Dolphins and Zonka and Kick and Mercury Morris and all that, and then I have Rocky Blyer and Franco
Harris. You're working off of memory, Bucky. I'm working off reality.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, it's the same. Then you go to the defense.
Give me one game that you remember Bob Greasy stealing for his team. And by the way, you know,
does he have to steal?
The Monday Night Football game versus the Oilers with Howard Cosell going crazy over Bob Greasy.
I think the only thing he has to do is be a bus driver. Just lead the team to the winner's circle.
But that's, you know, let me just I'll throw
so,
one.
So if we're saying that,
if you're gonna cherry pick games, let me cherry pick what ranks probably in the top 10 most seminal games of the Super Bowl era, maybe even top three or four. Super Bowl 13 against the Dallas Cowboys. Whoever emerged victorious from that one would go down as the greatest team of the 70s, nay, of the Super Bowl era, at least as of that time. The mighty Steel Curtain defense allowed 31 points to the Cowboys. Does that sound like that Bradshaw and company were just hanging on while the defense did all the dirty work? 31 they allowed. Bradshaw threw 4 touchdown passes in that game.
Everybody has a
game. That's one game.
It's one game, though.
But it was the Super Bowl. We agree that the Super Bowl is more important than a game in October.
I beseech you. Please, can we use all the data at our disposal?
I encourage you to do
Super Bowl rings.
Okay.
But the data at our disposal, which includes game film, includes stats, which includes Terry Bradshaw being one of the most inaccurate quarterbacks in the history of the NFL, of all time.
Right.
Of all time.
How can he be number one at the job?
Of all time.
The job's most important qualification.
Which is what?
Accuracy.
Why? Wait. When did we decide that's the number one requirement?
All coaches will tell you. Two things.
I know coaches would all tell you that. I know because coaches are control freaks. Of course, coaches want their system executed the way they want it executed. But I know, and you guys both, or you guys know, I love the gunslinger.
Staubach is way better than Bradshaw. He's a gunslinger too.
But the numbers don't bear that out.
It's not even close.
Of course they do.
It's not even close.
All right,
explain
Staubach's
it to me.
Why am I crazy?
Why am I crazy?
Have you seen all those Alcoa can't wait commercials? Like those things in the middle of the game.
That has nothing to do with that. What are you talking about?
How many times Roger would bring the Cowboys back?
I'm the one who goes with his gut, not you, Bucky. Give me some analysis,
Roger. Bring back.
Roger did a lot of stuff on the Alcoa Presents the Fantastic Finish.
Fantastic Finish, yes.
Yeah, I remember Fantastic
Finish. I never remember seeing Terry Bradshaw on one of those, ever.
I mean, I don't know.
Because the defense was always up. The defense always put them up.
This is how the more serious-minded colleagues are gonna undo my work to refer to Fantastic Finishes.
Does he have any fourth-quarter comebacks, game-winning drives? Do we have anything that
let me think if I can come up with that bogus immaculate reception.
That was not a catch.
Let me see if I can come up with one. Super Bowl 14 when he doesn't just turn a deficit into what?
Who's that against? Super Bowl 14. Who's that against?
Who is that? What are you talking about? Now, so wait, the opponent, the LA Rams weren't worthy enough for me to hold that one up. You just said, did he ever pull off a fourth quarter comeback? Here's what I love. How many guys – I was just asking who was in the game. Let me just say
– So that's when they threw the bomb over –
Can I say something to
Nolan,
you, please?
Nolan Cromwell said.
That's right. Not Nolan Cromwell. Rod Perry, but yes.
Nolan Cromwell was on the deep play.
He was on there. No, it was Rod Perry who almost knocked it down, but he didn't. And listen, how many guys – you want to say how many guys have you seen this? When have you seen this guy do that? How many guys in history, of all these legendary quarterbacks in history, can you recall not just leading a fourth quarter comeback, but uncorking the deep ball in the fourth quarter of Super Bowls? Who has the guts to do that and connect and the skill to connect on those?
Your entire argument is based on nothing but Super Bowls. Once again, I beseech you to use all the data while we're asking how many.
Because we said of the era, we didn't say the best in-game
How many times was Roger Staubach benched for Terry Hanratty and Joe Willie Gilliam? Because Bradshaw was benched over and over again for those two guys.
And up and through 74.
He's got like a four-year window when he was good.
Didn't Hollywood Henderson say that he couldn't spell cat without CNA?
Let me – oh, well, that –
did Hollywood Henderson say that?
He did say that. Well, how's that valid here?
I was just making sure we're talking about the same guy.
I know. The guy who couldn't spell –
we're talking about the same guy.
The guy who couldn't spell cat, if you spotted him the C and the A, according to Hollywood Henderson, apparently was bright enough to call his own plays in the huddle. I mean,
everybody called their own plays in the huddle.
I know, but everybody loves the
swoon. Everybody did during that era. Everyone did that.
I know, but everybody loves to
everybody
swoon.
Everybody did that.
All right, but everybody loves to swoon over the guys that can do that. This is what Terry Bradshaw.
Jim Hart called his own plays.
Okay, listen, I'm telling you.
I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
Wes, I want to hear your argument, but before you give it, I want to point out this. The idea, this absolutism about the rings don't matter. Like, the rings must matter on some level.
Of course they do. They're part of the equation. They're part of the data that we're using.
I didn't say that they're –
you're acting like the regular season means nothing ever. The first couple of rounds of the playoffs don't mean anything. It's all about what you do in the Super Bowl. And meanwhile, his defense
does
is carrying him to the Super Bowl.
Does it matter that he played his best in those
Super Bowls? Of course it does. That's part of the decision. But it doesn't trump
it doesn't the entire season off, like, you should be able to play – one game. I mean, the defense carries them.
Those it doesn't carry. Trump having a 38 completion rate, a 30.4 passer rating, a 6-24 TD to interception.
What year are you looking at?
That's his rookie
early
year.
Early 70s?
He's got plenty of these. Look at these. He can barely get above 50% completions.
Do you – is the contention that the Steelers would have won 4-6 with Bob Greasy?
Yes.
I mean, that's really what it comes – that, talk about cherry picking. Wes just cherry picked his rookie season. And by the way, those numbers
sound –
there are
plenty more seasons.
Those numbers sound way, way worse to a 21-year-old kid listening right now who doesn't understand the difference. They're generational differences. I understand that those were bad numbers even in the era.
Terry Bradshaw is number one.
Number one what?
He was your number one quarterback.
As of Super Bowl 20.
What about Joe Namath?
Joe Namath's in my rankings there. Where do I have him? I have Namath as of 20. I don't know. I don't remember where I have him, but he's on the list. Let's jump ahead.
He should be ahead of him.
Let's jump to modern times because my defense of Terry Bradshaw is maybe a channel changer for the youngsters out there. Although I will say,
it's going to be a channel changer for me.
Yeah.
I mean, because this thing that when curmudgeons want to argue with me about the ring count, they put themselves into this position as though the rings have nothing to do with anything. When, as you may note, the NFL season each year finishes with a postseason.
Why don't you just –
and then they award a Lombardi. When people say, well, why does that matter? Why does that matter? What do you mean, what does it matter? That's the whole point of the whole year of the thing is to win the championship.
Suggestion, just eliminate the whole rankings thing and just list, like, total rings won by quarterbacks, and that gets rid of everything.
That I understand.
That's what you're doing.
I understand the snark.
All we're doing is counting rings.
That's not true at all.
It is. It's absolutely true.
Is it, it?
I mean, you are ring counting.
Are you? You're right. I'm ring counting to a degree.
So just list the rings won by quarterbacks.
No. I am
Jim Plunkett, the second best quarterback of all time.
I am making it a major factor that if you win in the postseason, that you deserve to be elevated as a result. Yes, that is a factor. You guys are saying, nope, more important is accuracy. So Steve Young's the greatest of all
time. I remember reading on this website a couple years ago all the people who had Eli Manning ranked as a better quarterback than Peyton because he had more rings. It was as stupid then as it is now, and it's insane.
There is nuance within that. See what
you're
doing,
but you're not allowing for nuance.
No,
you're not allowing. Terry Bradshaw was an inaccurate quarterback, and he was carried by a great defense.
You, sir, are not allowing for nuance. I am not saying that the rings are the only thing that matters.
Terry Bradshaw is a worthy Hall of Famer. He's not a worthy best quarterback of the first 20 years of the Super Bowl era.
You know what? I really do think. I think you're a prisoner of 21st century thinking, which requires that a guy is completing at minimum 60% of his ball.
Not at all. I think Terry Bradshaw was a fine quarterback. I think he brought more to the table than Bob Greasy as far as playmaking ability. Bob Greasy did some things better than Terry Bradshaw, though, too.
wore glasses, popularized being a four eyes under center. That's what he did better than Terry Bradshaw. All right.
Touche.
Let's jump ahead to Super Bowl 50 now, a.k.a. the here and now. My rankings go as such, and let me know what you think about these. Tom Brady, number one. Montana, two. Let's stop right there. Why do you put Montana ahead of Brady, Buck?
The rings. He's undefeated.
Don't be a weirdo.
He's undefeated.
Why is it better to lose?
He's undefeated.
Why is it better to lose in the divisional round than the Super Bowl?
See, you want to put this stink on me. You want to treat me like I'm an 8-year-old. But it does. Well, first of all, Tom Brady, if it weren't for a couple of very fluky things against the Giants, could be 6-for-6 in the big game. So why do you have Montana? Cuz he's clean. He never threw an INT in a Super Bowl.
He's clean. Just the eyeball test. Like the way he played the game, the way he was so precise.
You played against him?
No, not that old.
What do you mean? He retired in the early 90s. You get drafted in what, 93?
I never played against him. I did see him. I got drafted in 94. He was still playing. He played in Kansas City before I got there.
Would Montana thrive right now?
Well, the way the rules are, yeah, the way they open up the field, the way they let him dink and dunk. If he was in the right offense, would they allow him to dink and dunk? Even if he played in the West Coast offense.
What about the Jerry Rice factor? I like to, you know, I diminish Peyton Manning because as opposed to, I'll read him real quick.
Isn't Brady, the Bill Walsh factor more important than the Jerry Rice factor?
Yeah.
Bill Walsh turned every quarterback he had into a monster.
That's true.
Well, I mean.
Dan Fouts, Ken Anderson. I mean, he turned all these guys.
Touched.
Yeah. So, all right. So is it fair to then knock down Montana a peg there? I think versus Brady, Brady has had, you know, Randy Moss, that was a brief window that he had with Moss. He has Gronk now, who's the best tight end of all time. Still, though, what guy, you know, I elevate Elway and Marino especially for carrying some really bum rosters.
That's fair.
Deep into the postseason again and again.
Can I tell you what I think, what separates Brady from
Montana? But Brady's done that too.
Look at what Brady's done from age 32 to 39. Joe Montana was basically done by age 32 as a difference-making quarterback, was benched for Steve Young. Since the age of 32, Tom Brady's been phenomenal. He's been an MVP candidate every single year. To me, that's what separates him. Every year they're in their conference title game with him leading the way. And for Montana to do it like 8 or 9 years, that's fine. Brady did it for 15 going on. He might do it for 19, 20.
I agree, and it's almost hard to categorize the Patriots as a dynasty because dynasty indicates – I mean, it's a name brand that has
– what's better than a dynasty? Because that's what the Patriots are.
Well, they're something different. But yeah, I mean, you know, given the results, yeah. But the only constants in this run for the Patriots in the 21st century are Kraft, Belichick, and Brady. Right. Everything else is come and gone along the way. I have a hard time calling that dynasty because though you think about it, it has to do with more principal parties.
Are the Buffalo Bills a dynasty?
I put Jim Kelly as of Super Bowl 40 in there for exactly that reason. I mean, to get to four straight Super Bowls the way they did. And, of course, you don't like Jim Kelly.
I'm never going to forgive him and for stealing the Bengals no huddle and trying to call it the K-Gun and taking all of the credit for it. Come on, Marv Levy. You complained about the Bengals. You brought them to the league office, and then you stole their offense and took all the credit for it.
I will say this, going there.
I agree with you. Sam Weish doesn't get the credit in history.
He doesn't get the credit for it. I will say going there in 94, which was on the heels of the four straight Super Bowls, they talked about Ted Marchibroda because Ted Marchibroda was the guy to kind of put that offense in for them. That offense is kind of funny because it's the same offense that Tom Moore was using for years and years with the Indianapolis Colts or whatever. But Ted Marchibroda, and I was amazed at the simplicity of that offense when I stepped in and how simple it was and how they were able to use tempo to really force people to play a simple defense.
But isn't that the result of personnel? If you have Thurman Thomas in there, James Lofton.
I think it's the perfect storm. I think it was the perfect storm in terms of a simple scheme, the tempo forcing the defense to play a very vanilla look. You had a quarterback who could call plays and understood how to kind of get it going. Then you had the perfect running back for the system, the perfect backup in Cotton, Kenny Davis. You had Andre Reed, who was maybe the best slot receiver of that time. You had James Lofton on the outside. I mean, they had all the pieces in place. And so, yes, they did swipe the use of tempo from Weish and those guys, but that offense was very, very different than what that West Coast system that Boomer Esiason and those other guys were running.
Or, I like or that Wes. Ohio. See, Wes, it's very interesting. Wes,
Ohio River offense.
Wes likes to be – likes to keep – ever keeps the emotion at arm's length most of the time. He's very cool
you
and
get
calculated.
Me fired up.
He gets how you get, but then all of a sudden I mentioned Jim Kelly, and oh, I don't root for the Bengals anymore. They Bengals hurt me too many times, but all of a sudden I bring up Jim Kelly, and look at what comes up. Like, oh, a little bit of a little black and orange faithful.
I will always have a fondness for the 70s and 80s Bengals, but they are dead to me now.
They're dead to you now.
They have been dead to me since 1997 or 98 when they cut Lee Johnson for telling them everything that was wrong about the organization.
The left footer, right?
Lee Johnson, yeah, he was a good man. He is a good man.
I go Elway at three because of what I already said there. I mean, yeah, same thing you could say about Marino. My goodness, Sammy Winder, Vance Johnson, Steve Watson. Mark Jackson, this was his team, and he got these teams to three Super Bowls. As I write on NFL.com, forget the two Super Bowl rings in the twilight. Everybody wants he only got those. Yeah, I agree. He only got those because of the defense and Terrell Davis. Scratch those out, just as I say scratch out Super Bowl IX off of Bradshaw's resume. I'm looking at Elway did with an absolute bum roster is remarkable stuff, and I don't think we give him enough credit for that. At number four, I go Rodgers, then Favre, Marino, Peyton, Roethlisberger, Bradshaw, Breeze, Bucky. I see you wrinkle your brow at the man at number eight there. Why do you wrinkle a brow at Roethlisberger?
I mean,
go ahead. Go say you speak your piece. You're not upset about Rodgers at number four as of right now, the fourth best of the Super Bowl era. Let's stop there real quick.
I got no problem with it.
That's all right, right?
I'm fine. Peyton Manning, I'm fine.
And by the way, Aaron Rodgers, another guy.
Roethlisberger.
A lot of these names, it's interesting. Montana had the benefit of Walsh and some real talent around him. Elway didn't. Brady has had some hasn't had some. Aaron Rodgers is another guy who doesn't get credit for elevating guys. He won that Super Bowl. He won in 45. Mm-hmm. He was behind an atrocious offensive line. Same credit I give to Ben Roethlisberger about his most recent Super Bowl. That was a terrible offense.
The only thing I have.
And those guys can overcome that. Brady can't. Peyton can't.
I'm taking Drew Brees over Big Ben.
I'm taking Steve Young over both of them.
Explain yourself, because I'll tell you, it's funny you say that, because as I was working on this, I asked a couple of smart fellas that we work with, Alex Gelhar and Jim Reinking, and they both said that they would take Breeze over Young. I really sweated over that one more than
anything. I'm saying Breeze over Roethlisberger.
Because?
I think, how many 5,000-yard seasons does he have? Like, at the time, that was kind of like one of the holy marks, and he surpassed it maybe four or five times.
I look at how you beat me up for ring counting. You're counting numbers now. Now you're swooning over numbers.
A significant accomplishment.
It's very good. That's why he made my list. He's one of the 10 best of the last half century. That's pretty good stuff.
I'm just trying to figure out what separates Big Ben, like why Big Ben gets the nod over him.
I think you know what the difference is.
He's a
Where's Roger Staubach on this list?
Well, he fell off. There was
Ben Roethlisberger's better than Terry Bradshaw. Come on,
Bradshaw's ahead of Staubach. Listen, rare is the opportunity for two guys to go head to head twice the way Staubach and Bradshaw did.
Staubach and Steve Young should be in the top 10.
I came very close to both those guys being there, and I almost knocked Breeze out. And frankly, I put Breeze in there for a little bit of currency. I felt like that we have been talking up Staubach quite a bit and Steve Young on the Super Bowl 30 and the Super Bowl 20 lists. So I thought we had to honor Drew Breeze for what he's done because of those numbers. They're hard to argue.
You had to honor Big Ben, too. And I am a huge Big Ben fan.
Yes, I did have to put Big Ben on this list. He, in 12 years in the NFL, he's played in three of the Super Bowls. That's one quarter of the Super Bowls available to him.
Super Bowl counting.
There we go again.
Oh, well, that's I know that's crazy. I know that's outlandish stuff. Reason that the season exists. What does the regular season exist
Vic
for?
LeBeau
exactly?
has the number one defense every year for a decade, and Big Ben gets the Super Bowl.
There we go.
Somehow that's not a factor whatsoever.
I mean, it's not a factor at all.
It's not a factor.
You don't factor that in at all. It's just how many times did he appear in the Super Bowl?
Three Super Bowl. The first one.
Let's look at it this way. Who's the great? Who's the best quarterback in history to not get to a Super Bowl?
I don't know.
Think about it. It's relevant.
I don't know.
Otto Graham.
No, come on. Well, who have you seen that you said, now that guy, it's amazing he never even got to a Super Bowl? Marino's the guy who never won one that everybody says, well, you know, that's the knock on his resume. Who's the best to not get there? I ask that for a reason.
Tony Romo? Philip Rivers?
Maybe Tony Romo. Maybe Phil Rivers. Maybe Dan Fouts. Those would be
– I'd say Fouts.
Yeah, Fouts. I would go with Fouts.
Fouts, another one Bill Walsh tutored.
Fouts. I would say Fouts.
Do you put any of those three guys in this conversation?
No.
Why not? Because of their lack of appearances in a Super Bowl.
Not really.
It is, it's absolutely relevant whether or not they get – is it a fluke? I mean, listen, you can get to a Super Bowl. Brad Johnson got to a Super Bowl and won one. Mm-hmm. The idea that
Joe
Eli
Flacco
Manning
– did.
Right. That's
Eli
right.
Manning did.
That's right. You can get to Super Bowls. You don't magically appear in the Super Bowl over and over again on flukes. I mean, the idea
I'm not calling them flukes. I'm saying it's one part of the factor, but once again, you are totally dismissing Dick LeBeau's defenses in this equation.
Absolutely not. I'm not dismissing that any more than I am. Tom Brady's first three Super Bowls happened to be played when he had some high-end defenses going
his way.
Yeah,
but he's got 14 more years of excellence.
Joe Montana, go ahead and look this up. When the 49ers won Super Bowls, those defenses that nobody ever talks about were consistently top three defenses.
They were great.
Aaron Rodgers, now there are guys that are outliers to that. Elway, like I say, he overcame a lot of
Aaron Rodgers, all you have to do is turn on the tape. I don't even, right. like, to me, I direct your attention to NFL Game Pass. That's all you need.
Agree. I've never seen anything like Aaron Rodgers on the football field. And by the way, today, or as of Friday, you'll be able to see on NFL.com, I project ahead to Super Bowl 60 and what that list might look like. Who do you think is going to jump up there?
Bradshaw back to number one.
No. You know who? Bradshaw probably isn't going to – no, I think he definitely doesn't make the list. But I'll tell you who I have on there. Talk about a guy who looks like nothing you've ever seen before. Cam. Cam Newton.
Yeah, we're going Cam. I can see that.
Who else? Who else is going to – rise up that list?
Russ?
Jameis?
He's not going to be top 10 all time.
You're going to want Marcus Mariota on that list.
You think so?
I am a huge Mariota fan.
Ooh.
I don't know about that.
Ooh. Get off. Got that Joe Montana footwork.
Ooh.
Bucky doesn't like that at all.
Joe Montana footwork.
You don't think that's going to happen? Do you think he's a
– I think he's a very good player. I think surrounded in the right system, supported by the right cast, yes. Would I go out on a limb and say he's transcendent? I'm not quite sure, because when I look at his game, I still see that they have kind of some of the training wheels in place. This year and next year would be big to see how he continues to move away from what he was doing in college to playing the game a little more traditional, even like Cam has had to kind of do. Cam has had to be able to show that he can play in a traditional way while still doing some of the things he did at Auburn. I'm not saying that Marcus can do it. I think that will be the thing that separates him from good to great when it comes to the context of this list.
I'm trying to – I really want to – we need to have a list that shows what's on this – on the requirements to be considered here, because it's inescapable.
Well, I mean
– Is Mariota going to be a perennial playoff participant? I don't know what other measure really trumps that. You know, whether or not you – breakthrough. Now, once you get to the postseason, if your play diminishes in January, when the premise of your team is that you are the guy, and it and you regress statistically and otherwise, then you have to be knocked down on a list like this. That's why I put Peyton down on this list a little bit, and people
it's
will be
one of the factors.
That. Right,
it's one of the factors.
I just can't imagine what's more significant. In a game that exists, they don't just play the games and then announce, all right, at the end, like college football used to be, all right, the dust is settled. Let's now figure out who we've decided is the best. No, they play They play three rounds of conference playoff games. Then they go and play the Super Bowl for a reason. I don't understand how you can sort of like dust that off. Like, yeah, it counts, but his accuracy is more important to me. That's more important?
Because it's not always the quarterback lifting the team into the Super Bowl.
Well, here's the whole thing. Here's the
45
thing.
Guys on a team.
We have made it where it's 1 and 21. It's the quarterback and then the other 21 guys.
No, you're getting very egalitarian. Maybe that could be true back in the late 60s like and 70s. Bob Greasy could just turn around and hand off, and he's the main man because he's handling the ball, so he gets a certain amount in the spotlight because he is
We've made it. The fact that we are paying Kirk Cousins $20 million.
But, Bucky, that doesn't happen. They didn't randomly decide to circle quarterback and say, let's pay that position more. They deserve it. They do. It's not a chicken or the egg debate. They do what?
Like, what do
he's
they do?
The
like,
main,
what we're seeing.
Much more
what,
so.
What we're seeing in this league, we have three or four quarterbacks that are up here, mm-hmm. and everyone else is down below. But yet we continue to say that the quarterback, it's a quarterback-driven league, it's a quarterback this, it's a quarterback that. When in reality, there are three or four name-brand quarterbacks and a bunch of guys. And the guys that are winning are the guys that are supported by it, the running game, the defense, and all the auxiliary parts. And so – what we have
here's the difference.
Is
let
a
me.
One
I agree with you.
Deal.
I agree with you. I say it all the time. There's nothing less sexy when you're talking about what it requires to get to a Super Bowl than to say this. But what clearly is true in the last 5 years or so is if you have depth and talent on both sides of the line of scrimmage, those are the teams that consistently are getting there. But you know who's always in the mix, and those things ebb and flow. You know, with injuries and with drafting and free agency and everything else. The one thing that the teams that are consistently in the postseason are the ones that have those quarterbacks.
The old quarterbacks.
Old? I don't know about old. The old high-end.
Okay, well, who would you say in our list of elite quarterbacks, what are the names in the elite circle right
until
now?
2 years.
I'm talking about right now. Right now.
Tom Brady.
Who are the elite guys? Tom Brady's one, yes.
Brady.
Who else?
Roethlisberger. Two. Rodgers.
Breeze
is – Are we still saying
he's
probably
elite?
Don't.
Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson is heading in that direction.
Is he behind the? Is he inside the velvet rope? Or is he on the outside?
He's inside. Watch his second half last year.
Okay, yeah. So Russell. So are we saying Cam is?
Oh, and Cam. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay, so what we're saying is the teams that are always in contention are the ones. But what we're about to have, like next year, we're going to have a thing where all the names kind of fall off. So we don't have Peyton. Rodgers is still in the conversation. Mm-hmm. Roethlisberger will be. But now we have a bunch of new names.
I'm pessimistic about Roethlisberger. People who say, like, oh, he's got six more years by applying the Brady and Peyton measure. Yeah, those guys have
plays
got
differently.
The crap
can't,
kicked
he can't
out
take,
of him.
He can't right. He can't get
he's got the he's run. Got maybe
but
he's
playing differently,
years.
Though.
He's
playing
he's playing like them now.
That's why I keep saying I want in the third round to hear with the third round pick, the Pittsburgh Steelers select Cardale Jones, quarterback, Ohio State. That's what I want to have happen. I've already put a call in to the powers that be up in on the banks of the Three Rivers. Anyway, go ahead, Bucky.
I think it's interesting. As much as we talk about the quarterbacks and quarterbacks are demanding big dollars and we've always kind of fallen to the narrative about it being a quarterback-driven thing, are we going to get to the point where we finally take a look and step back and look like, wait a minute, are the quarterbacks really as important – or is it the other stuff around the guy that we play with?
My response to that is this, and you know, it's a little it gets murky because it's like you just said, it's the description you gave them, name brand quarterbacks. That doesn't necessarily mean that they are in fact the top five quarterbacks. But for what it's worth, and in fact, you and I were going back and forth on this on Twitter a week or two ago, Buck. The name brand QBs have won all but three of the 21st century Super Bowls. Now, you can say Peyton Manning was deficient in 2015. He obviously was, but they're, you know, for whatever mystique and, you know, pre-snap reads and all that value that contributed to the Broncos. So he got two of them. Roethlisberger got two of them. Rodgers has one. Russell Wilson has two. Brady has all the rest. And then you can fill in Flacco, Brad Johnson, and Trent Dilfer, and those become very sort of fluky kinds of things when
they're the exception.
What's that?
They're the exception that proves the rule.
Right. So you do need that. So I'm losing your point.
Well,
then,
look,
Buck. You do need to have
Bucky's
that.
Right that we're at a flux right now. We'll see which way it goes, but we start to see some of the big names fall off in 2015. But 2014, if you look at the divisional round, you got 7 of the 8 best quarterbacks in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Well, why are you nodding in agreement, Bucky?
No, it's
that's right.
It's true, but
I think it's the dollar thing that is affecting.
No, I'm saying this in that context, and right. Because I think it's telling that John Elway, who's a quarterback, who's won a couple different ways. He did it when he had to do it all by himself, mm-hmm. and then he won it when he had to have everything around it. I think it's telling when he balks at Brock Osweiler, I understand where you're coming from, but I'm not going to that level. I'm not going to that level to say that you are the man that when you walk in the locker room, you now have more currency than Von Miller, Aqib Talib, and all these other guys who are blue chip guys. Hmm. I think it's telling when a quarterback who is an executive says, hold up, I understand that the quarterback needs to get the way because it is a quarterback driven deal, but I'm not going to put you way up on this pedestal when everyone else is there and you haven't necessarily.
So maybe the conclusion of this conversation and of trying to rank out quarterbacks over a 50-year stretch is that the ebb and flow of the game, like I said, 10, 15 minutes ago, it's a little unfair to anybody in the 70s to hold up completion percentages because compared to modern guys, it's just the game was very different. The rules were different. It was harder to complete 60% of your balls. Obviously, 50% was perfectly acceptable.
I hear what you're saying, but you can turn on the game film and see that Terry Bradshaw was not an accurate quarterback. Get rid of the completion percentage stat all you want.
My contention is with somebody like that, though, is, you know, if I can connect 40 years with a comment, isn't that sort of what you would say about Cam Newton? I think you overcome that with other virtues. That's all. So Tom Brady,
I mean,
Terry Bradshaw would throw some bad picks and you know was wildly inaccurate.
He
but
had prototypical size, a cannon arm, was good in the pocket, and another one of the factors that helps Terry Bradshaw is he had the greatest defense in history on his side.
A super fast release, great functional scrambler.
And people still hold him up as physically he's the prototype.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, but the point is, I guess, is that the ebb and flow of the game, it's right to say, Buck, that the sweet spot really for the quarterback, maybe the perception that we still sort of apply to these guys is owed to what we saw in the mid-80s to through the 90s. Is that fair? That a quarterback was never more important than in that sort of window. Is that fair? Because in the 70s, you were a part of the team, and very rarely did an individual, and you can go through the list there and disprove that if you want to. I don't think you can. There's nobody who carried his team continually to the playoffs. You were a part of a collective talent that was above everybody else, and that's the reason that it was the usual participants in the 70s. It was always the Raiders, Vikings, Rams, Steelers. I mean, the same teams were always in the postseason. The teams that got there in the 80s and early 90s always had these mm-hmm. dominant QBs, save Aikman's Cowboys, who were a great
I will, but then my counter to that would be to look at the defenses that accompany those successful quarterbacks. When you look at Brett Favre and when they won the Super Bowl in 96, I was there. It was the number one defense in nearly every category. When you look at the 49ers that won during the
But that's
80s
true of
90s,
anybody. But
no,
there,
hold on. But I'm
there's
saying,
nobody
but,
who
but
wins
we never,
the junk.
I know, but we never talk about that. We talk as if Joe Montana just took a cast of no names and won the thing. Like, it's never that. I'm just saying the conversation is always the quarterback.
My pushback to you on that, though, is –
we don't reveal.
All right, then when I gave you the opportunity a few minutes ago, why didn't you say Dan Fouts belongs ranked higher up here? You're not giving him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe that wasn't his fault. He had a lot of things going in his favor.
But I didn't dismiss him or exclude him from this club because of lack of Super Bowl rings.
We're not comparing apples and oranges. We're comparing apples and oranges when you start talking about a guy whose prime was 1975 versus a guy whose prime was 2015. But you're also not being fair to – I mean, it's not fair to cherry pick one guy and say, Well, I mean, he had good players around him. Now, everybody did. Now, you don't win Super Bowls by – there's never been a Super Bowl victory. The closest you might have come to that, even though the defense was very good in Carolina, would have been to say this year, wow, Cam Newton carried that team, that very flawed team, all the way to the
championship. That would have been the outlier.
But nevertheless, he carried them to the Super Bowl. That was remarkable stuff.
To your point about the 70s, who was the highest paid player in the NFL in 1977?
Well, it was a running back.
It was O.J. Simpson.
Yeah.
79, it was Walter Payton. I mean, it's hard to believe looking back now that the quarterbacks were not the highest paid players in the game.
Absolutely right. So given that evaluation, given that that's the fact, and I do point
that
out early up, it factors into who is not retrospectively and the qualities you look for in a QB in the year 2000. Rather, what were the qualities that made you a winner in 1975 or 1978? Yes. I state that. Yeah. As of 1986, there isn't a QB in the Super Bowl era that you would hold up as superior, save possibly Roger Staubach. But that's a taste thing, and I will say that I'll go with the guy who beat Roger Staubach head-to-head twice in two Super Bowls. I have a hard time making a case that
– If it was tug-of-war, you'd have a better case, but it's football.
Well, it's funny.
I mean,
remember the old.
It's not checkers or chess or what you're connect for. You're not playing one on one.
Well, the Steelers would win that tug of war because they were getting little help, if you know what I mean, with their muscles a little bit. Although it's not like the Cowboys were clean either.
Ask Gil.
I know Gil Grant loves to point that one out to me, and I like to shoot back at him. Hey, Gil, I don't think your Cowboys were they all Boy Scouts. Yeah,
hey,
they're
Gil,
no,
ask
we're not
your
doing
computer.
Anyway, spirited debate. Final thoughts. I don't want to broom you and make you feel like you didn't make whatever point you want to make here before we wrap it up here.
Wow. My final thoughts. I feel smarter for being in the same room with Bucky, but then that's offset by Sheck.
I love debate club. I feel like we just had debate club over your quarterbacks. And even though you have a lot of fandom that you bring into the deal, and I can't understand why so many Steelers are on this list, but so many Steelers are on all your lists. So many.
I don't even know how to respond. You know, I mean, listen. When we're talking about Super Bowl era, there is a chance that when we talk about the team that has six rings and appeared in eight Super Bowls, there's a chance that they're going to come up when you start talking
about. Yeah, but according to you, because of their quarterback, they have all those rings.
How dare you? See, now you're
– because of their quarterback, they have all those rings. Not because of all the Hall of Famers.
I know. I feel bad. When I think back about those poor Dallas Cowboys, I feel bad for Roger Staubach. He had to hand it off to Tony Dorsett and had to throw it to bums like Drew Pearson and Tony Hill.
And that
doomsday defense
was
such junk.
What chance did Roger the Dodger
have against the mighty Steel? Terry Bradshaw had everything in his favor in those
games. Like Bob Greasy did.
I don't know what you want me to tell you.
Bob Greasy. I'm just the same.
And again, if you're going to compare those guys, all I can tell you is look at him versus his contemporaries. Do you think? I mean, I know you know the answer to this. You're just being wise now. But Bob Greasy threw the ball four times in a Super Bowl. Terry Bradshaw elevated and was slinging it. What? Oh, we're losing the game. There are 10 minutes left in the season and we're losing. I'm going deep. Who else did that? Who since has done that? Who else does that? We're going to lose the game unless I uncork a winner here. Go get it, John Stallworth. You got it in your hands. Now run it to glory. That's what he did. What do you want, my man?
You don't call passes when you're winning. You just kind of grind it out. I got three guys back there. I have three guys behind me that can get it done. I'm just going to hand it off to them, let them do the work.
I think it matters that somebody.
You do? We're just calling plays.
How about Super Bowl 10 when he uncorks the game winner to Lynn Swann, 64-yarder, and he does it a hair before he takes a lick from a Cowboys defender and is concussed and never touches the field again. Standing in the pocket taking the lick, Buck. When's your friend Drew Brees done that? When's the last time you saw him do that in his climate control dome?
I thought Burt Jones did that. Didn't Burt Jones do that? He did that for Baltimore.
MVP
Burt Jones.
Burt Jones
was very good.
He did that.
He was terrific. I don't have anything bad to say about Burt Jones.
He has great Miller Lite.
Stay healthy.
Sincerely, Burt Jones.
All right, real quick, let's get to it here. We have step out for 1 second here, Chris Wessling, because here he comes, everybody. The Clemson defensive end that Bucky is very high on, Shaq Lawson.
Dave, Dave.
Ooh, I must be in the big time because, Bucky, look who's joining us right now. Guy, you've been looking at quite a bit over the last few weeks, nay, months, nay, years. Here he is, everybody, one of the great stars of that Clemson team that almost got it done there, but a glorious year. Nevertheless, it's Shaq Lawson. What's the poop, fella?
Oh, nothing, just chilling, just enjoying being out here in L.A. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing well. I'm doing better than I was before I met you, but I'm not doing as well as you are doing now and are going to be doing next month in Chicago. Let's go over a couple things real quick in the draft process. Now, of course, I never got to hear my name called out by the commissioner. First thing is a little bit of advice. What are you planning on doing as soon as you get that call? What's your first thing? Like, are you going to be sitting there? Are you going to be at the table in Chicago?
Oh, yes, sir, I will. When I get that call, I'm just going to be happy and just blessed.
First person you hug?
My mom.
Correct. You see that, Bucky?
I like that. I got a bigger question, though. A bigger question. Since I know he's going to be in Chicago, What are you wearing?
Oh, that's a good
question. Have you picked that up? I mean,
I
have to have a couple of options. We got to have a couple of options depending on how you feel the day of. What colors are we talking about? I know you can't give it away. What colors are we thinking about, though?
I'm thinking about a little kind of blue in there. And it's just going to be nice, though. It's going to be nice, you know.
You already been fitted for
it? Yeah, I already got the suit. About to be fresh.
Two buttons?
I got a three-piece suit.
It's a three-piece suit. Yeah. Okay, that's the look of the time.
We're doing it nice.
All right, that's good. But now I'm a little concerned here. First of all, I appreciate your first answer there. So many guys, they get drafted. This is the moment you've been leading up to, really, your whole young life. Guys who turn and hug their agent instead of their mom, I don't know what that says about a man.
Nah, I ain't going to hug my agent.
No, good.
Probably I'm giving him a little pound, but, you know, the hugging part, nah, I ain't going
to
hug.
All right. I mean, but that thing of, like, that you have to hug your agent. Your mom's sitting there. She's been there before the agent was. She didn't know you were going to grow up and be a big-time football guy. Here's the thing about the outfit, though, that Bucky brings up. The blue, you want something semi-neutral now, because what if you go to a team that wears
it's like gray, but a little light blue in there somewhere.
Oh, you can't go wrong with light blue.
Yeah,
Can't go wrong with light
blue. Here's the thing. I mean, like, there are certain teams that, like if the Raiders got you, that's going to go with whatever you're wearing. The black hat, that'll work fine.
You gotta think about the hat.
Yeah.
Hat.
But make sure now, like, what if you go to the Bengals or somebody like that with the orange? Dolphins don't.
See,
have
I was about to
clothes.
Do. I was about to do something orange because I had went to Clemson, but
that makes sense. Yeah,
you know, like Vic did something crazy last year. He had a red and black suit on.
Yeah,
went to Atlanta, so
he
it
did.
Was crazy.
I had pictures with that. It worked out for him.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, that's crazy.
Best guy besides Bucky Brooks you've met so far in this whole draft process? Who's the most exciting NFL star or whatever that you've gotten the glad
celebrity in? What celebrity, like, who have you bumped into, you like, man, you know, man,
I think he understood the question fine,
celebrity.
Bucky, you didn't have to try and clean it up for me.
Took you too long.
A celebrity, I don't know.
Come on, it has to be somebody that you met during the Super Bowl or something, like somebody you bumped into that you're like, you know, it's pretty cool.
Oh, I met Chad Johnson, though. It was before this process, though, but I bumped heads with Chad Johnson at the mall when we was down at for the Orange Bowl. We down there. I talked to him. He's a funny character.
He didn't know you, though, did he?
Nah, he didn't know me. But he said he heard of me. But I at the time, I didn't know it was Chad Johnson. I was just walking by.
He's pretty unassuming. He's not a big guy.
Nah, he ain't. He's not big. So that's what got me. He was just real skinny, and we was taller than him. And so.
What is it, whether it was at the combine? And by the way, I have to bring this up again. People like to always call it the combine, but you know what? If you want to really get ahead of your peers here before you get drafted, if there's a last-minute call, like, tell us something. Shaq, we're having a tough time. Tell us something we didn't know. Like, you should tell them. It's not the combine, because that's something that separates – that's a farming equipment thing. A combine is when everybody gets together to do one thing. It's a combine. So now you've just passed through that. That's for you, Bucky, too, because you do a lot of work around the combine. So use that going forward. But Shaq, so you can drop that one out there. But what's the dumbest question that came up either in that, you know, there or elsewhere?
They asked me who the fourth president was.
What? That's an awfully hard question to throw at
somebody. Yeah, that was a hard question. I can't remember what team it was, but the first thing I came in there, who's the fourth president? And I'm thinking around like, I don't know at all.
Monroe?
I don't know, Shaq. You didn't know that?
I can't remember. I think it might be Monroe. Is that right behind the glass, everybody? I think it goes Washington, Adams, Jefferson. I'm pretty sure of that one. But then it's like Monroe, and then the other Adams comes back around at like six. What are we talking about right now? We don't have time. Well, that's I guess that was the question. Did you have an answer for it?
No, sir. I was like,
you just said I have no idea.
No idea.
That's probably best.
I mean, just be honest.
Yeah.
Just be honest. I don't know. Let's get to the next question.
The guesses might be more fun.
Yeah.
All right. Here's a little thing that I'd like to do with you real quick here, Shaq. Oh, well, before we get to my list of questions, the questions of Bernard Pivot. He's this French guy who I think he's a philosopher type or a famous interviewer who used to ask a series of the same questions to people. You ever see that show Inside the Actor's Studio?
No, sir.
With the bald guy, bearded guy, James Lipton. I'm going to get your answers to these too while we do this.
No, sir.
Yeah, okay. May as well do both of them.
Why not? Two for one.
Are you in fact named after Shaquille O'Neal?
Yes, sir, I am.
Isn't that a funny thing? Because it's such a distinctive name, but we're seeing a lot of guys named Shaq in this generation.
Yes, sir, it was crazy. Because you know how most babies have a name playing in before they were born. I waited like a day later. I came out long, baby, tall, and basketball was part of our family. So it's like Shaq, Shaquille, and I stuck with the name. Play basketball with the name, football with the name, so just name just been.
I dig that. Are you good at ball?
Yes, sir.
Is that right?
Yeah. You saw him nod his head. All football players think they're really good at football.
Yeah, I am. I got video evidence to back it up.
They all think they're. He think, like, in his mind, he thinks he's an NBA player.
Somehow I feel like you're condescending there a little bit, Bucky, saying, except that I've heard you talk about your basketball game, too.
I saw the reaction. Like, he was like, you know, a basketball game. Like it was. It's another option. If football doesn't work out, basketball is an option. Like,
could you have played at Clemson if you wanted to?
Yes, basketball.
You could have.
Definitely. I could have started on Clemson. I feel like I would have started on Clemson.
Why don't we? Maybe you should really listen. You're going to go in the first round. Spoiler alert. I mean, it's pretty much a given at this point. Why don't you become the first guy since primetime to go both ways? Or Brian Jordan did it, right? Was he the last guy to do it?
Brian Jordan also did it. Yeah, be a two-sport player. Yeah.
Why don't you try it, Shaq?
I should try it. Nate Robinson coming to football now, so.
Yeah, Nate is going to try and make it, so maybe he can go the other way.
Yeah.
Let's administer our quiz now. It's Bernard Pivot's questions. What is your favorite word, Shaq?
Yo.
Yo.
Yeah.
Simple. I like that. Your least favorite word?
Nah.
What? I like those two answers.
Like when somebody say nah, it's like.
Yeah, you don't like being told no to something. Okay. I got you. Okay. What turns you on?
Hmm? Huh? What turns me on?
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, no.
I can tell. You know what? That was you were following some of that same thing in your head of like, better to say nothing than to say something. I got same thing as not answering the fourth president question there. What turned you off?
Bad breath from a girl.
It could also be for a guy, too. Like, I'm sure you wouldn't appreciate it if Bucky was.
Yeah, bad, bro. Yeah, that's my pet peeve.
But that doesn't happen to Shaq Law. The sound you love to hear.
The sound I love to hear. That.
What does that mean?
What's that mean?
What is that sound?
Just having a hard time with a person, you know? Like when the coach do that?
Yeah. That's a bad sound.
Yeah, it's a bad sound.
Yeah, okay. Bad sound.
So the profession you'd love to have if you – I think we've established what it is already. If you weren't going to be a football player here.
Oh, if I weren't a football player, my dream is to work with the Paralympics. That's something I've been looking to when I'm in school, and I really to look at it serious about doing that when my football career over with. I would give back to people disabled, and I always see a smile on their face. So
that's very nice. And you mentioned just before we started here that J.J. Watt, your favorite guy in the league, not just for his on-the-field deeds, he does a lot of that stuff off the field too. So a good role model in that way. Last thing is, when they make the Shaq Lawson movie, who should play you?
Who should play me?
Ooh, that's a big one.
I'm going to say my agent, Tory Denny.
He gets to play you.
He gets to play you?
Yeah, he gets to play me.
I don't know about
that. You're not going to go with a professional? You're just going to let you?
Want some handsome devil out there? I'm going to
have him in there. But I'm going to have to get Kevin Hart in there too, though.
Yeah. Kevin Hart?
Because I'm a
Shaq
funny
Lawson.
Guy. I'm a funny
5 foot four,
you know?
Kevin Hart.
No, I'm a
playing
funny
Shaq
guy.
Lawson.
So we must bet we're going to have to go out and get if he's going to play Shaq Lawson, we're going to have to hire a bunch of 5-year-old kids to play the rest of the world then. So that he towers over.
Kevin Hart plays Shaq Lawson. We have to put him on a box.
The high concept kind of movie there.
You got to have a booster seat.
All right, Shaq Lawson, you're delightful, and a team is going to be lucky to have you, not just because you're going to dominate at the next level. Another spoiler alert there. I hope the color scheme that they, when they hand you that jersey, works well with what you've got going on there.
Yeah, y'all got me thinking I need to change that.
No. Just neutral. Just go neutral. Then you got all your bases covered.
Yes, sir.
Hey, good luck and enjoy Chicago. Hopefully we'll cross paths with you there. A bright future lays ahead for this character, Shaq Lawson, everybody.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You listen to Dave Damashek.
All right, real quick, fellas. I liked him quite a bit. I think he claimed himself to be a funny guy, and I get the sense that he is.
He is kind of funny. Your little questions were pretty
well,
funny.
Well, as promised, I want to get your answers, too, here. Bucky, you go first. Your favorite word.
Awesome.
Are you 11?
Yeah.
Chris Wessling, I'll say you. Favorite word.
Onomatopoeia.
Very nice.
Oh, my gosh.
Least favorite word, Bucky.
Can't.
Oh, I like that. It's motivational.
How about that?
Yeah, very good. Like, I can't believe Dave put so many Steelers on his Super Bowl list, even though they're the best team of all time. Wes.
Bradshaw.
Surprised it's not K-Gun. What turns you on, Bucky? Keep it clean. You know?
No, it's always clean.
All right.
Turns me on. What I get excited about. Fit.
Fit?
Yeah, when someone is fit.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe you were talking about the man in the mirror. All right, I got you now. That was like a little weird. All right, Wes.
I'm a calf guy.
Nice, I didn't have.
Nice well-turned calf is a turn-on.
Interesting. All right. We're getting very specific about the turn-on thing, but I guess that's what it
was. What's so funny, though, the first thing I thought was legs. I was like, I don't want to say that. I don't want to say that.
I don't know. I guess I should.
He says calf.
I should
and I'm
find
like,
out.
That's funny.
I want to figure out who this Pivo character was when he came up with this thing. Like, because he's asking it to actors and stuff, so I think they probably go much deeper than calf, but I don't know.
Oh, like, you know.
I don't know what. The walk. Craft of acting. I don't know what they would say.
Silent walk on the beach or something? I don't Moonlight walk on the beach? I don't know.
Running lines with Bob De Niro.
Oh,
it's exhilarating.
That's a turn on.
I don't know. That's when when Pivo asks these questions, I don't know. What turns you off,
Hilarious.
Bucky?
What turns me off?
Cankles.
Ooh.
I'm just saying that.
I mean.
Salt. Could be anything.
It turns me off.
Quarterbacks getting too much credit.
Yeah, that turns me off.
Even though they make way more money.
Selfish.
Than anybody else.
Selfishness.
Oh, I don't know why you looked at me like that applies to me.
I'm just saying, I don't like selfish people.
All right. I don't like grown men wearing shorts in the place of business.
You
know? Like Bucky Brooks is wearing shorts right now. Chris
Wessling. I should retire because I can't bring my kid in.
Melodrama.
I believe that one with Wes. What sound do you love?
Cha-ching.
Wes.
Birds chirping in the morning.
Oh, that's sweet. That's nice, Bucky.
It is.
What sound do you hate?
Buzzers.
Wes?
Incessant car alarms.
You know which one is getting under my skin of late? Do you have that credit card that has the so-called chip on it and that you have to put it in?
Yeah.
And you do everything right, and it's sitting in there. And then when the transaction has been transacted or whatever, completed, it goes, like, whoa, I did something wrong. It's like, no, it's just telling you you can take your card. I was like, that's awfully harsh.
Obnoxious.
It could be like a ding. They got to fix that. The profession you'd love to have if it weren't doing whatever it is you do here.
Profession I would love to have. Teacher.
Oh, very nice.
I want to have Ken Burns' job.
Making documentaries?
The historical documentary. And a great American, first of all.
I love that. I love that as in theory, but I bet that's got to be so tedious going through all that old stuff. But nevertheless, I hear you. What profession would you hate to have to do?
Lay bricks.
Yeah, that would be no good.
I'd hate to go back to being a mailman.
As I've said before, anything that involves touching other people's feet would be the one for me.
Oh, yeah.
Podiatrist, MMA fighter. your foot's in my face. I'll quit. Okay, good. I tap out. Whatever. Get me out of here. Your foot just touched me, man. Get out of here with that crap. Last thing is, I never understand this question when James Lipton asks it on Inside the Actor Studio when he says, what do you hope to hear when you get to the pearly gates? I mean, there's only one answer or some variation on it.
I'm in. I get in.
Do you think it's going to be close for you, Bucky?
No, I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know. I would like to think that I would get a pass.
But are you worried, though?
No, I'm not worried.
You're not worried about it?
No, I'm not worried
about it. Not worried that whoever's the gatekeeper there that day is going to be like, ooh, Bucky.
I'm hoping I can sweet talk.
Look here, we got some real.
Let's talk about this right here.
I'm not saying you're out right now, but you're gonna have to talk me into this after what happened.
I'm hoping I can talk my way in.
Wes?
I don't believe that there are pearly gates.
I like where Wes's head's at on that one. All right, NFL.com, here's what you can find. Bucky Brooks' latest mock draft. Chris Wessling with a terrific piece about the best offenses in 2016 coming up here. Who do you have at number one there?
I was just on the AFC, and I had basically the Patriots and Steelers as the top two. I have the Patriots. I trust them a little bit more.
Martellus Bennett, man. Wes, I saw you tweeted that, which was
– Man, I hope the Houston Texans are high since I'm going in – on them. I'm pushing the chips in on them a little bit.
You know what I've heard? I think Wes picked up on the same thing. You like both sides of it, Bucky, so then you can't be wrong. You just said about what John Elway said about Osweiler.
Oh, I mean, like what someone is paid and how I project them to play are two different things. Like, I think it's
well,
hard.
How good could they be? You cited that he's only played 22 games since high school.
Well, I mean, if he plays the role that he played last year with the Denver Broncos, that was good enough to help them get to the Super Bowl. So,
you're a mystery, Buck.
I'm not a mystery, but I believe,
the number one defense in every category from midseason to the end of the season.
I agree,
Houston Texans.
And you know what else? I'm not somebody who breaks down the film play after play the way the two of you guys do. But the guy who jumped out at me when he was out there was Kevin Johnson.
He was good.
Man, that defense.
Good. So now what they have to do early in the year, I think if you take what Pittsburgh was able to do with Roethlisberger when he was young, with Osweiler, like, hey, just ease into it, defense you carry. We're going to give it to Lamar Miller, find a way to get it to Hopkins, maybe one of the young guys, because I think at 22 they're going to draft a speed receiver. Make some plays in the passing game, but put it on the defense. Then around week 8 to 10, Osweiler kind of comes in and let him do a little more and get comfortable, like we saw Russell Wilson do, like we've seen Roethlisberger kind of grow from being a manager to a playmaker. If they go about that progression, they can be fine. But I think there's a lot of pressure on the coaching staff to make sure that they prove the organization right by making this big move for Osweiler.
Very good. I got distracted. I was thinking about Terry Bradshaw slinging another gorgeous deep ball.
You know, I wish we could have one of those simulators.
Yeah.
Where we could put the Steelers and the Dolphins and Greasy and Bradshaw and get it going.
Well, we don't need a simulator for that. We saw it happen in the 70s.
I would love to see that.
I'm not going to. All right, fine. You
early,
asked me.
Early 70s.
You implied you wanted early me to 70s. Say it again, so I'm going to say it again for your benefit.
Buddy. Early 70s.
I just want to tell you something. When people evaluate who the best teams are of all time, go ahead and make your list. The greatest teams you've ever watched. 60s Packers. You would say Niners of the 80s, Cowboys of the 90s, Patriots of the early 21st century, or you know, through these years, pick whichever edition of these Patriots you want. You know who else you would list in there? You would list the Cowboys of the 70s. You would list.
We wouldn't miss in the.
You would miss. Dolphins. You mentioned the Raiders. You would mention the Dolphins of the 70s. You might even mention the Vikings of the 70s for
Come
their
on.
Three Super Bowl appearances.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yet, among all those titanic teams, all playing in the exact same era, who stood head and shoulders above them all, winning four out of 6 years?
The undefeated team.
The Pittsburgh the team that was Steelers. That's who did it, Bucky.
Undefeated. Undisputed. Undefeated. Undisputed.
Terrific.
Undisputed.
That was a nice little run that they put together there.
Undisputed.
During the most boring era in pro football.
And new. Like, that's what they say. Like, that's what they say at the end of the fight.
Dang
undisputed.
Good. Yeah, and once Pittsburgh undisputed. Had perfected that kind of boring ball, the NFL said, well, we got to stop this. We got to open up offenses. And what did Pittsburgh do? They opened up the offenses and did it better than anybody else, Buck, on the right arm of one Terry Bradshaw. How about that? MVP, 1978. There you go.
He has a gold jacket, right?
Yeah, to go along with those four silver trophies he has.
Bob Greasy has a gold jacket too, right?
I mean, fraudulent.
I'm just saying.
Who cares about the Hall of Fame? What I want to know is where they rank on Shaq's list.
That's right. Now you're getting it, Wes, because if I ever get to go back through there and start taking some busts out of
you'll take busts
out of Canton.
You taking Greasy's first?
I got news for you. Hey, Bob, oh, I'm taking those God. Glasses off. I'm poofing out that hair, and now you're Jim jacket. Plunkett. That's you from
here on. Put Plunkett in the Hall of Fame.
God. That's what I'm going to do. And guess what? You know who's joining you soon? Eli Manning.
You're going to take his jacket.
I've got to take it. I don't want to. I have to.
That's what we need to do. I want to go back, and I want to revoke some Hall of Fame.
Somebody suggested that I actually do that.
This is the most mean-spirited video you'll ever.
I want to go to Canton, and I want us to just remove.
I'm not going to name names.
Yeah, but –
I was talking about exactly this, and somebody said, oh, that would be a great – you should do that. You should do that here for the NFL. I said, how do you think that would play if I start plucking off? If I actually start –
I hope you take the little bus down. We can take the bus down.
We just need
some movers coming through.
We can snatch jackets
We
off.
Just need some medium-sized cardboard boxes. When we go to Canton in August, I'm just going to set them over the heads of those things. Nope, this one's been revoked. I'm just going to write marker over it. This one, we're saving this space for, you know, that kind of thing.
We can't bring Orange Peel. We can't bring Orange Peel when we do that. I know he's our historian, but we can't bring Orange Peel when we revoke.
Wait.
Orange Peel, Elliot Harrison.
Elliot Harrison, I'm sorry. I'm sorry from Game Day Blitz, my bad. Orange Peel.
I don't think you understand ball the way I do.
Orange Peel.
I wonder who he removed. I wonder who – We'll say that. I think we're getting long, but I'm curious about who we can remove. 10 guys that we can remove from the Hall.
I mean, I'll do the list, but I don't
know. Oh, my God.
Bob Greasy is the guy who you remove. All right, I'm leaving. That's the end of that. Thank you very much, Chris Wessling and Bucky Brooks. Great times here. We'll be back with another show for you at the start of next week. In the meantime, go check out all their work at NFL.com. We'll talk to you next week. In the meantime, enjoy the tournament. Been a thin slice of heaven.